afternoon, everybody, and good afternoon, Alexander. It's a real pleasure to have you here with us today in our first podcast of the series that we are launching here at the insolvency section at the IBA. I am Tomás Araya, and I am one of the senior vice chairs of the insolvency section, and I am also a partner working and in charge of the restructuring and insolvency matters in Bombchil, an Argentine law firm. This is a project, the podcast project. It's a project that we at the section decided to launch in our last meeting in Paris back in November 2023. And we thought with the other members of the podcast task force, which also includes our very good friends, Gordon Hollering from Scotland, Pedro Arregui from Spain, and Shirley Koh from United States, we thought that we should start the series with one of the person that has been heavily involved with the section in the past, has been very relevant for the section, and has kept working all this year with the section in the matters of interest, particularly international or cross-border insolvency matters.
And that leads us to our guest today, Professor Alexander Clauser. Alexander is a professor of civil procedure and insolvency law at the University of Graz in Austria. He also has been a professor at the Adler's University in Austria and in Adler's universities as a guest professor in the United States. He is well known in the areas of insolvency, particularly international insolvency, and also in civil procedure, particularly in consumer litigation there in Austria. And more importantly for us, he has been a chair of our section of insolvency law with a very good friend of the section as Chris Bessan back in the year 2007 and 2008. And since then, he always been close to the section, first as member of the advisory board and then as the UNCITRAL, as one of the members of the group that are part of the UNCITRAL liaisons officers, particularly group 5 of UNCITRAL, which is the group that discussed the issues of international insolvency and which is going to be the topic of our podcast today. So, Alexander, good afternoon. It's very good to have you here, and thank you for having accepted our invitation.
Good afternoon, Thomas, and thank you very much for having me as your guest for this podcast project of our IBA insolvency section.
It's an honor. Let's start from the beginning. What can you tell us to inform the audience about the origin of UNCITRAL Group 5 and what led the group to start working on insolvency matters and how those first years and that initial work eventually led to the 1997 model law and how the IBA was involved in those years?
Yes, I think it's important to know a little bit about UNCITRAL, the United Nations Commission on International Trade Law. UNCITRAL is an organization within the United Nations system. It was founded in 1966, and the goal of UNCITRAL is to further to improve the progressive harmonization and modernization of laws in the field of international trade and investment. Which methods does UNCITRAL use to achieve this goal? The method used by UNCITRAL is to promote and the use of and the adoption of legislative and non-legislative instruments in a number of key areas of commercial law. And one of these key areas of commercial law where UNCITRAL is active is the field of insolvency law. because obviously insolvency law and the functioning of insolvency law in cross-border insolvency cases is an important element in international trade and commerce. How does UNCITRAL negotiate these instruments? It is a very inclusive process. The process of negotiating these legal instruments, which UNCITRAL works on, is achieved by including a large variety of participants. There is, for one, the member states of UNCITRAL. UNCITRAL presently has 60 member states, which are elected for a term of 6 years. Then there is all the other member states that are of the United Nations that are at present not a member state of UNCITRAL. They also participate. And then there are invited observers. These observers comprise, for one, intergovernmental organizations, such as, for instance, the European Union, and also non-governmental organizations, NGOs, such as the International Bar Association. So altogether, it's a very inclusive process, and the result of these negotiations are legal texts that are widely accepted as offering solutions, one, to different legal traditions, and second, to countries at different stages of economic development. In short, UNCITRAL has thus been accepted and recognized as the core legal body of the United Nations system in the field of international trade law. Now, the cooperation between UNCITRAL and in particular its working group 5 insolvency law with the International Bar Association goes back almost 40 years. Because as early as in the 1980s, the insolvency section of the International Bar Association, or rather Committee J, as it was called then, was fully aware of the challenges that cross-border insolvency situations presented to the stakeholders in international insolvency proceedings. Tomas, you may remember that in the 80s, there was very little cooperation between countries in the field of insolvency. Most countries, well, in fact, every country has their national law on insolvency. That is still the case. Some legal systems are similar in that respect. Others are quite different. But what was lacking in the 1980s was a framework how to coordinate insolvency proceedings when they are pending in parallel in more than one state. And obviously, even if you have an insolvency proceeding pending only in one state, then such insolvency proceeding frequently has cross-border effects, such as the debtor having assets in other country or creditors being located in other countries than the state where the insolvency proceedings have been opened, the opening state. And all these issues of the need to cooperate and to coordinate such proceedings were already recognized and identified in the 1980s, but there were no legal instruments apart from some bilateral or multilateral regional treaties, but there was no international framework on a worldwide scale.
Excellent. Yes, that was exactly the case back when UNCITRAL decided to move and start with the work that led to the 1997 model law. From those initial years that led to the 1997, what can you tell us about, IBA involvement and INSOL organizations, the other organization? Most of the people that, let's say, produced the IBA were known, some of them professors, other practitioners, and I am sure you have some stories from those years.
Yes, Thomas, I do. In fact, the IBA played a significant role in the preparatory works that eventually led to the UNCITRAL Model Law on Cross-Border Insolvency of 1997. In particular, it is worthwhile to mention two projects of the IBA Insolvency Committee J, as it was named then. And these projects are the Model International Insolvency Cooperation Act, which was drafted by Committee J in the mid-1980s and was adopted by the Section on Business Law, as it was called then, and eventually the IBA as a whole, as a useful instrument to facilitate and overcome exactly the difficulties that I have described, which resulted from the territorialistic approach on insolvency as it was then. So the MIICA or MICA was in fact the first forerunner of the UNCITRAL Model Law on cross-border insolvency of 1997. There was yet another document, an important document that was drafted, developed and drafted and adopted by Committee J, namely the Committee J Cross-Border Insolvency Concordat. This document dates from September 1995. And again, it was adopted by the Council of the Section on Business Law of the IBA, and it contained already very significant elements that we find in the UNCITRAL Model Law on Cross-Border Insolvency of 1997, such as, for instance, the distinction of main proceedings and non-main proceedings, and the need to coordinate between the insolvency administrators and the insolvency courts that are involved in such parallel proceedings. Because if there is no coordination, the goal of insolvency law, which obviously is to serve the interests of the creditors of an insolvent company on the one side, but also to reorganize and restructure an insolvent entity that has a future, that should be given a second start and therefore should be afforded the possibility to reorganize. These two principal goals of insolvency law cannot sufficiently be achieved when there is no coordination between countries between insolvency administrators, between insolvency courts. That was, as I said, already recognized and dealt with in these two projects of the IBA of the mid-80s and the mid-1990s. And IBA being an invited NGO, an observer to Working Group 5 of UNCITRAL, therefore had the expertise to contribute to the negotiation and the drafting of the 1997 UNCITRAL model law on cross-border insolvency. And I think we should mention one name here of an IBA Committee J member who was really instrumental in that work, and that was Dan Glossband. He attended every working group session of Working Group 5, and for many, many years he has contributed significantly to achieving that goal. And the goal was the adoption of the UNCITRAL model law on cross-border insolvency in the year 1997. And it was adopted by consensus, not only of the member state active in Working Group 5, but subsequently also adopted by the UNCITRAL Commission and also by the United Nations, and has been recommended to all member states of the United Nations to be considered and to be implemented into the national laws of the United Nations member states. And as of today, we have approximately 60 countries, 60 member states of the United Nations, which have adopted legislation on the basis of this 1997 UNCITRAL model law on cross-border insolvency.
Excellent. Yes, as you mentioned at the beginning, insolvency law has always been a territorial matter. Okay, so the fact that in those years, UNCITRAL, following the work of IBA and others, realized that there was a need of, let's say, an international framework with a minimum set of rules that all over the world can agree when there would be a cross-border insolvency case was a huge step. And the fact that IBA took a relevant role there with other NGOs is something that is recognized, and we should, you know, also tell the new generations of our involvement those years. I think that the drafters of the, and I think we will all agree that the drafters of the model law were, of course, aware of these complications, and they adopt a very intelligent approach that allow the model law to be, you know, a huge improvement, but at the same time with a prudent approach, okay, dealing with recognition, dealing with access of the recognition and effects of the recognition, recognizing that non-main precedent could be, you know, were a fact, and you cannot avoid the fact of, you know, the territorial approach for the assets located in one country, recognizing the access of the representatives to the other jurisdiction, and of course dealing with coordination and the parallel procedures. It is a lot, but that is basically what the model law offered to the world in 1997, and I think that it has been a huge success. Of course, there will always be, you know, loopholes to be filled in, and that is basically what we lawyers live from. So we shouldn't recognize the importance, but at the same time, the reality. So Alexander, from those years, UNCITRAL moved to other projects. Okay. From those initial years, then UCitral realized that it was an important, and I would say essential, work that what working group was doing. Remember the Asian crisis, and then we have the other crisis that they have worldwide effects. And so they keep on working. They keep on working on other projects. And you, as after you step down as chair, you still were in those years and are today working as liaison officers with UNCITRAL, and you were involved and you participated in all of the sessions of UNCITRAL, that you may also mention how they work, that they have two meetings, once in your country and the other one in New York. And from those meetings, they started bringing other projects to the table, and you study them. And so other projects started that you may want to mention.
Thank you, Thomas. And I think you said the perfect word. There are always loopholes in the law. And one of the loopholes that was identified, for instance, on account of the well-known Rubin case, is the fact that the UNCITRAL model law on cross-border insolvency apparently did not suffice, was not enough to guarantee the recognition and enforcement of insolvency-related judgments. You know, the Rubin case was about an avoidance action, and it was apparently uncertain whether a decision of a court in one country on an avoidance action would be or could be recognized under the UNCITRAL model law of cross-border insolvency. So the logical consequence was to turn to this issue, and for several years, the UNCITRAL Working Group 5, which was authorized by the Commission, by the Commission of UNCITRAL, worked on a project on facilitating the cross-border recognition of such insolvency-related judgment. Because recognizing an insolvency proceeding as such is one thing, but recognizing and enforcing an insolvency-related judgment is the second issue. And this work led to the second model law that was negotiated and adopted by UNCITRAL, and that is the 2018 model law on recognition and enforcement of insolvency-related judgments. Eventually, and very soon after that, there was a third model law negotiated and adopted, and that is the model law on enterprise group insolvency of 2019. Because we all know that with groups of corporations, groups of companies growing larger and larger, the insolvency of such a group poses very complex and very difficult challenges to the insolvency courts, to the insolvency administrator. And as I said, always with a goal in mind of satisfying, on the one side, the claims of the creditors, and on the other side, facilitating the possibility of reorganization and restructuring of companies that deserve a fresh start. So we have now three model laws developed by UNCITRAL, and on all these model laws, the IBA, through its delegation of liaison officers and through the expertise and the practical experience that the members from our organization, from the insolvency section, can contribute, the IBA has been able to offer their assistance and expertise to UNCITRAL. And finally, we do not only have these model laws, which states are invited and encouraged to implement into their national law. We also have some non-legislative instruments, which are called legislative guide. And in the format of a legislative guide, UNCITRAL has been very active since the early 2000s. And the legislative guide on insolvency law has grown over these years. It includes legislative guide for a national insolvency law. It includes the treatment of enterprise groups. It includes directors' obligations in the period approaching insolvency. And the last part, part five of the legislative guide, has been a guide on how to best practices in the field of insolvency law for micro and small enterprises.
Excellent. And let me add that all of this information is available at the UNCITRAL website, and also you can find very useful information on case law on UNCITRAL cases. So there is this specific sites on case law from all over the world, different countries, because of course the cross-border insolvency cases leads to disputes or to, you know, decisions all over the world. And UNCITRAL has been gathering all that information and include them in the articles that has any reference to the case law of a particular country or of two particular countries if they are, for instance, agreeing on a protocol or whatever other matters, or providing an interpretation, for instance, of difference of the different definitions of the model law. One of the most important one, of course, that, you know, keeps evolving year after year is the center of main interest, because of the importance of the COMI, of the center of main interest, in deciding which is the main proceeding. And of course, the effects of being the main proceeding vis-a-vis being the non-main proceeding. And as you mentioned, the relevance of the groups, and that led to UNCITRAL on studying and agreeing on the model law on enterprise group and connecting these two issues. Of course, the COMI of the groups is not an easy issue. Okay. It's not so easy to agree on whether it is, you know, best for the goal of maximizing the recoveries of the creditors to just agreeing on one COMI of all the members of the group, or, you know, recognizing different COMIs for the affiliates or for the subsidiaries. And this issue is still, and I guess will continue to be, analyzed, studied, and even challenged, whether we should, you know, be more flexible with COMI, or whether we should, you know, stick to a more rigid concept of COMI. And also this, of course, connect to whether a foreign shopping is always bad, okay, always abusive, and as we have studied in the university many years ago, or if we can be efficient foreign shopping, and therefore whether in which part you draw the line, okay?
Yes.
So these are issues, all of these are issues that, you know, are still being discussed.
Perhaps we should mention the two issues with which UNCITRAL is presently dealing, and they also have been identified as sometimes crucial. One issue with which Working Group 5 is presently dealing in its semi-annual sessions, and you have rightly mentioned that UNCITRAL Working Group 5 meets in New York in spring and in Vienna in late fall or early winter. The two issues are civil asset tracing and recovery in insolvency proceedings. And the other issue is identifying the applicable law in insolvency proceedings where issues are concerned that deal with other jurisdictions than the opening state. Obviously, an insolvency proceeding is primarily governed by the law of the state or country where the insolvency proceeding is pending. That is the default applicable law, but quite frequently it would not sufficiently respect or honor the justified, the legitimate expectations of other stakeholders. And therefore, quite frequently, one has to apply another law other than the state of the opening of proceedings. For instance, in the case of labor contracts, it would not be appropriate if labor contracts of a subsidiary in another country were suddenly unexpectedly governed by the law of the opening state, just to give you an example. So the issue of identifying the applicable law in cross-border insolvency proceedings is the other topic with which Working Group 5 of UNCITRAL is presently dealing, and it is yet to be seen what form that the product that is eventually achieved will take. It could be another model law, or it could be another chapter of the legislative guide. That is yet to be seen. But it is a challenging and interesting project because, as you know, applicable law is always also an economical and sometimes political issue, which is not always easy to agree upon. But the history and experience has shown that UNCITRAL eventually, and through that inclusive process that I have described in the beginning, has been able to achieve such a consensus and to come up with a finished product.
Yes, let's hope that they can agree. Of course, the asset tracing work, it's extremely important. But now, of course, with the digital assets, the issue has turned a little more complicated. Okay, so the not only for, let's say, usual cases, but also for insolvency of exchange dealing with digital assets, or even debtors that owns digital assets, we need a set of rules to expedite the recovery. The guide on, or the work on applicable law on insolvency matters, it's a little more complicated. It's a more ambitious case. We of course have the, as you said, the default rule should be always the lex fore concursus, but we understand that there should be other cases. Labor is the easy example, but there are others a little more under discussion. We have the, let's say, the experience of Europe with the directive. There are other certain exceptions there to the lex fore concursus, but of course it's a market, it's a union, so it's easy to agree there on the exceptions. When you think about, you know, something worldwide, it may be a little more complicated because countries, you know, retain their sovereignty on certain cases. But as you said, consensus has always been the goal, and I'm sure that the work will be a, let's say, a first step, not so ambitious on the applicable law, and at the end it will be a relevant work. I also heard that the UNCITRAL is working on a simplified procedure for small and medium enterprise, which is also very important. And I guess that the possibility of reaching consensus will be a little more less complicated than in the other ones.
That text, Thomas, has already been adopted. That is okay. Part 5 of the legislative guide. And yes, you're right. That was not so controversial as the questions in the field of identifying the applicable law. So I share your assessment in that aspect. Yes.
Well, Alexander, I think we are reaching the end. We want to thank you very much. Thank you very much for accepting our invitation and for being, you know, our first guest in this project, quote unquote, experiment that we are launching here. I think the decision to invite you was a very good decision. We are very happy that you accepted. We are very honored with your presence today. And well, we hope to have you back after the New York meeting later this year with the last update from Mooncitral.
I thank you very much, Thomas. I would like to add one thing, and I would like to extend my very heartfelt thanks to my colleagues from the IBA, from the entire leadership, to the entire leadership, but also to my fellow liaison officers in the IBA delegations, because what is so, I think, so helpful in the IBA, our organization is comprised of lawyers from different countries, different legal traditions. We have the common law countries and the lawyers with a common law background, and we have lawyers from various countries with a civil law background. So in a nutshell, we in the IBA reflect this variety of legal traditions that we have in the world. And therefore, in our group, within our group of Mooncitral liaison officers, we have sometimes very long and sometimes challenging discussions over which approach we should suggest or where we can give our experience. And that is, it always widens your horizon to look beyond your own jurisdiction. And as I said, a big thank you to my colleagues from the Mooncitral liaison officers of the IBA and to the entire leadership. And thank you for having me today as your guest in the podcast.
Thank you very much, Alexander. I fully echo your words on the Mooncitral liaison officers. They're doing a terrific job there. Well, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.